From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Richmond.
Sunset.
Oakland, California.
Concord, California.
Fairfield.
Foothill.
Coming up, we follow food from the warehouse to the food bank to find out some of what it takes to feed those in need.
So every single day we have huge 18-wheelers who come in from the Central Valley and deliver truckloads upon truckloads of produce.
Then a conversation on how federal cuts are affecting local food banks.
Food banks were never meant to be the community's first source of food, and for many people, we've become that.
And we visit an exercise class where your dancing dreams can still come true.
Bam. More and bam. Hello, weapon.
This ain't no Jane Fonda aerobics. It's Cross Currents. Thanksgiving is right around the corner, and while some families are busy planning what's going to be on the menu for dinner, food banks around the country are preparing to make sure that those who can't afford a home-cooked meal get one anyway. In 2012, nearly 50 million Americans had less food access than they did the year before.
And if you go back and you look at economic data, you see that since the mid-70s, we've seen a steady march of having more people at the bottom of the income curve, fewer in the middle, and a very, very tiny number of people at the very top.
That's Paul Ash, the executive director of the San Francisco Food Bank.
And that's what's fueling more people needing food assistance every month. They can't earn enough money to feed themselves through the part-time jobs or the low-paying full-time jobs that they have. And it's increasing. It's not stopping. That trend marches on.
The San Francisco and Marin food banks serve 147,000 people every week. Today we're going inside the main distribution center in Potrero Hill to see what happens behind the scenes to get food to the people who need it most. Visiting journalist Rebecca Burungi brings us this story.
My name is Paul Ash. I'm the executive director of the San Francisco Food Bank. We're here today in the distribution center where we receive truckloads, mini truckloads every day of fresh fruits and vegetables, canned products, dry products like rice and beans. They come into our warehouse and they're stored, sorted, in the case of fresh produce, quickly turned around and distributed out to people in our community who don't have enough to eat.
Right now we're making our way toward the warehouse floor, and this is where all of our food comes in. My name is Blaine Johnson, and I'm the Media Relations Manager for the San Francisco and Marin Food Banks. So it's fresh fruits and vegetables. It's really healthy food.
The fresh produce mostly comes here from California, from Southern California in the wintertime, Northern California in the summertime. We'll go to Washington and Idaho for things like potatoes and onions, even into Northern Mexico in the wintertime so that we can have fresh produce year-round for our clients.
We have forklifts buzzing all around. It's very busy here in the morning. This is when we receive, you know, dozens of truckloads of fresh produce. So you'll see the employees moving those around on forklifts and putting them into orders that are going to go out to our food pantries this morning.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Jones. How you doing? Yeah, I'm what you call an order builder. What we do is we start from potatoes and yams and from on the pallet, and we build them up to make them look like this every morning.
They're just stacks all the way up to the ceiling, and we've got bulk rice, we've got other staples like oats, and what's going to happen is our volunteers come in every day. We can have as many as hundreds of volunteers a day, and they will repackage those totes of rice and oats into family-size one-pound portions. So we're going to move from the warehouse floor to our volunteer repack room. And in that room, we have a volunteer shift. I think it's kids today and maybe some adults. And what they're doing is repacking these bulk quantities of food into one-pound family-size portions.
So, well, we're, like, sorting kiwis for people who don't have food. So, like, they can survive, and we're doing it because we want to help people. My name is Stanley Chan,
John Mellon, and his name is Ethan Tran.
Kids as young as 4 can actually come in and volunteer here, and it's a great way for children to sort of get back to their communities, get connected with people who might have a little bit less than they do, and quite frankly, have some fun. You know, you can hear them laughing and playing, and it's usually a pretty fun morning.
And our teacher wants us to help people that don't have any food, so it's good to help people.
With people that don't have much food.
Because some people aren't as fortunate as us, so it's kind of like a responsibility to help other people.
The people who enjoy bringing their families here to volunteer the most are our most significant donors. And they, I think they're worried that their children aren't seeing the reality of life in the United States. And so this is a good starting conversation, a good place to start a conversation.
So right now, they are wrapping orders on the warehouse floor. So they're preparing this to go out to a food pantry. So you've got carrots on the bottom row and then a whole bunch of beans on the top, which is a great source of protein.
Well, the food will go out from here all to low-income individuals and families. Some will go out through schools. We distribute food in churches, which generally are kind of catchments for neighborhoods where anybody can come and register and get food assistance. And then we also distribute food in closed communities, so in Tenderloin hotels, seniors' residences. So those are places where only the residents can come and get food. It's a big operation, so it takes a lot of money to run it. But it's the individual that really keep this place moving.
That piece was produced by Rebecca Burungi, a visiting journalist from Uganda. To find out how you can get involved with food banks in your area, go to our website, kalw.org, click on Cross Currents. Listening to Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. Earlier this month, a temporary increase in food stamps, enacted during the financial crisis, expired. More than 47 million people are affected. That's 1 in 7 Americans. These are the biggest cuts to the federal program since it started back in 1964. It means that a family of 3 now has $29 less to spend on food every month. In California, the food stamp program is called CalFresh, and local food banks are seeing firsthand what happens when money is cut. Keisha Nzui is the advocacy manager of the Alameda County Community Food Bank. She came by our studios, and I asked her what she's been seeing at the food bank.
We have one longtime volunteer and advocate who depends on CalFresh, and he's lost $11 this month. And for him, that loss of $11 is 2 days worth of meals. And he's just put it out there that he'll just have to fast for 2 days in order to make sure he has enough food to last the month. We have a single mother with 4 children who hadn't heard about the cuts. And when she heard about it, she was brought to tears because she really didn't know how could she possibly feed her family. Because for her family, that's a cut of $36 a month. And that's really substantial.
So she heard about the cuts at the food bank. There was no communication to her in terms of the state telling her.
She did not hear about the cuts before they happened, and that's true. I don't know how each county communicated to their clients, but as food banks and our CalFresh outreach teams throughout the state, we did our very best to let everyone know to prepare for these cuts that were coming November 1st.
So the Alameda County Food Bank has this shocking statistic recently. You looked at calls to your emergency food helpline, and you compared the first 2 weeks of November this year, 2013, with the same 2 weeks from last year, 2012. And given the cuts to food stamps happened in between those two times, what mm-hmm. was the contrast you saw in your data?
So from November 1st to November 18th of 2013, 2012, we received 10 calls for help to our emergency food helpline from people who said they were calling because they'd run out of CalFresh benefits. That same time period this year, we received 51 calls. So that's a five-fold increase. And we know in both cases that that's just people who are willing to tell us why they were calling for help. So they just represent who knows how many more people who are calling for help just in the first 2 weeks of the month.
And what does this data tell you about the increased demand on food banks?
It tells us that the cuts really are meaningful and deep and painful. These cuts equal people not having enough food to eat. That for a family, that might mean 2 weeks of dinners that a child may not have, or 2 weeks of their breakfast and lunch that they don't have enough food for. These cuts are devastating and unacceptable.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm speaking with Keisha Nzui, advocacy manager at the Alameda County Community Food Bank. Have you noticed more people, different demographics, different kinds of people walking through your doors?
In general, who we serve reflects the demographics of Alameda County. We serve everyone. We serve lots of seniors. We serve lots of children. The majority of people we serve are children and seniors. We serve folks from every community throughout the county, so you can't put any specific face to it. I'd say over the past few years, we've shifted to many, many, many more seniors. And otherwise, ethnically, it reflects the demographics of Alameda County.
Mm-hmm. What about the basic question, that universal human right to eat, to feed your people, to feed the poor in society, these basic, basic questions? Have you heard conversations about that?
So we're coming up upon the 50-year anniversary of Lyndon B. Johnson declaring the war on poverty, which is when many of our social safety net programs were established, including what we know as food stamps. And that was a time when our country decided that hunger was not acceptable and unnecessary. And that program has been the most successful tool we've had to fight hunger in the United States. However, our Congress has prioritized balancing a budget, usually on the backs of programs that benefit people who are struggling in the United States, most of them children and seniors. And we continue to fight against that tide.
So looking at all of this, what's the takeaway that people need to get? What should people understand from the situation in terms of food banks?
They should understand that food banks were never meant to be there to be a community's first source of food. And for many people, we've become that. And we're going to become more of that as our country diminishes its nutrition safety net. What they really need to do is call their Congress members and their senators and say that these cuts are unacceptable. We have many more cuts looming in the very near future. And food banks won't be able to make up that difference. It's impossible, and it's not what we were meant to do. So we really just need to make our voices heard and make them strong that in Congress that this is unacceptable.
So, Keisha, in terms of donations, what is best for you during the holiday season, money or food?
Both are wonderful, but money, we are able to stretch a donor's dollars much farther than they are able to stretch at their local grocery store. So for every dollar in donations, we can buy $4 worth of food. And we're able to buy fresh food. We're able to buy shelf-stable food, but we're able to buy way more than the average consumer can. But on the same point, we want people to give food if that's how they would like to give. In that way, we're able to get a nice, diverse selection of food that reflects our very diverse community and their tastes. So we appreciate that as well. And we also want people to volunteer their time. That's very valuable to the food bank as we move millions and millions of pounds of fresh produce out the door each year. It's not possible without all of the volunteer effort.
That was Keisha Nzui, advocacy manager at the Alameda County Community Food Bank. So do you have any ideas on how food could be distributed to those who need it most? Share your thoughts with us on our tip line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Listening to Cross Currents from KALW News, I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for some artery cultural coverage with sexitude. On Sunday mornings in the Castro neighborhood, there's a place where rhythm reigns. Dancers pull out their leg warmers, spandex, and fluorescent headbands for Sunday school. And with the right accessories and a lot of attitude, dreams of being a backup dancer for a day come true.
It's a dance by donation, sex-positive, body-positive, age-positive dance class open to everyone.
It's the brainchild of Darcy Drollinger, who wanted a place where all kinds of people could come together once a week to connect with a higher power and dance with their soulmates.
At first, I was going to call it church.
But that wasn't quite right.
I was a little afraid that the word church might somehow scare people off that didn't want to go to church, you know. But Sunday school with a K sounds a little Electric Boogaloo, street savvy.
KALW's David Boyer takes us to the school that rocks.
All right, let's get started. I hear people coming up the stairs. Good morning, Beatrice.
A couple dozen people gather at the Academy of Ballet. It's early, 11 a.m., and while it looks like your standard dance studio, you know, there's wall-to-wall mirrors up front and ballet bars in the back, it's clear that this is not your average dance class. For starters, there's the students.
We have people who are 60.
Doctors.
People who are obese.
Drag queens.
People who've had HIV for decades.
And then there's folks like this.
I write software which helps manage the logistics at ports.
And this.
I teach AP Calculus and Algebra 2 and Algebra 1.
And this.
I work at a really vanilla job. We actually specialize in investment management.
On the surface, they all have something in common.
I work at a place that's pretty stodgy.
And that's one of the reasons they've come here today.
It's fun to be able to just dress up one day a week at least and live the dream.
The dream is backup dancing, and their dream maker is Darcy Drollinger. You can't miss him. He's leading the warm-up in fluorescent blue spandex with hot pink socks and a headband.
I personally have a spandex addiction.
Many people here have clearly followed his lead.
I am wearing star-studded fishnet stockings with sparkly panties.
A Hanes t-shirt with hand-stenciled lettering that says, I'm a stupid bitch. A
lot of good gold lamé.
Skimpy tops.
Leopard print booty shorts.
Neon colors.
A cut-off shirt with my hairy little gut sticking out.
Fringe.
And I'm fine if people come in gym shorts and a t-shirt. But if they put on a sassy flash dance top and some leg warmers, I can guarantee you they're going to dance harder and they're going to have more fun.
But don't be fooled by the outfits. This class is physically challenging and this warm-up is no joke.
And stretch. Flap back. Plie stretch. Flap back. Release sideline.
I'm not kidding. The first time I went, I could not really walk that well till Thursday.
After the class, I told Darcy, I said, oh my gosh, I can't do this. He just said, come back next week. Just keep coming back. And I did. And it got easier.
This is week 3 of this routine, so I'm going to push you a little further. And I tightened up a few things too, so you'll be happy.
Squeeze me.
The dance moves, honey, the dance moves.
So here's how it works. Darcy creates a new routine each month. He teaches it in bite-sized sections, adding new bits each week.
This little beginning part's the most complicated part of the whole thing. So once we get that under our belt, we can keep running that over and over and over, and we'll add the rest of it. And I'll put some music on, and we'll start working with music. 5, 6, 7, 8. Face, 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 shoulder, smooth skin, palm, palm. Yes.
Okay. Darcy demonstrates as he goes. The laser-focused students watch him in the mirror and mimic his every move. Some nail it. There's also some awkwardness, and there's a few questions. Once everybody's got it, Darcy moves on.
Boom! And I'm about to show you something gorgeous. Okay? Turn around. Boom. One. Push it out. Bring it in. Show it off. And bam. More. And bam. Hello. Whip it. All right? Let's try it with some music.
It's not about getting every move right every single time.
I want to see a little fire in your faces.
He pushes us to have an attitude, to be fierce.
Give me something. Sell the song to me.
It's kind of like half acting and half dancing.
You got no excuse but to seduce. 6, 7, 8.
He will often say in class,
I want sexy.
Give me sexy.
Or I want attitude.
Or give me attitude. I choose attitude over sexy. The sexy thing is still so tied up with my Catholic upbringing that sexy meant slutty.
Some of them are going to be better at tossing their hair. Some people are going to be better at, you know, the actual move. Some people are going to be better at crawling on the floor, whatever it is. You know what I mean? So using whatever strength they have.
Definitely feel glamorous. Definitely feel fabulous.
I want you to fire every muscle.
For some, muscle. Sunday school is a great way to unwind and get some exercise. But for many, the class is much more.
The class has definitely changed my life. I think I struggle with not being comfortable in my own skin. And I know this sounds kind of cliche, but he's kind of taught me how to love myself. To love who I am, to embrace who I am, and to show off who I am.
I would go crazy if I didn't get to dance. Don't get to have that type of expression anywhere else.
It seems like a lot of people in class have gotten up the courage to quit their crappy jobs after being in dance class for a while. You feel almost rebellious and you begin to get more impatient with things that don't make you feel positive about yourself. I think I understand more now why people go to church.
And for Darcy, their passion is his reward.
What is so satisfying is to watch these people when they give it their all. They give it everything they've got, and they may not be perfect, and they're probably not going to be perfect. But there's something so joyous when they are going for it in this kind of raw, enthusiastic way, purely for the joy of doing it.
You're fabulous. Have a wonderful week. I love you all. Thank you.
That story was brought to us by KALW's David Boyer. When it started, Sunday school was the performance. Not anymore. For the past year, many of the regulars have been performing with Darcy as the dance troupe Sexitude at small clubs, at fancy benefits, basically anywhere that will have them. And this Saturday, they'll be performing with Peaches Christ and Heclina at the Castro Theater. And as always, Sunday school will be in session at 11 a.m. the next morning at the Academy of Ballet on Market Street. Thus concludes this edition of Cross Currents. Today's team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Laura Flynn, Nina Gensler-Debs, Christina Loring, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Chris Hoff, Ryan Miller, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our senior producer. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio.
It's the sweetest thing that I've ever known. No.
This is Marcus Cohen and the Congress. They'll be bringing their deep soul grooves to the Brick and Mortar Music Hall in San Francisco on Friday. Music starts at 9 o'clock. For all the details, go to KALW.org, click on Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
The sun goes up when you call my name. I feel no shame.
This is Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Each week, we play you a sound from somewhere in the Bay Area and ask you what it is and where we recorded it. And then we ask you where we should record next. Is there a sound you think we should feature? We love hearing from you, so call us and let us know. 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. What's the sound of where you live?